Welcome to the County Conversations Podcast, brought to you by the Florida Association of Counties Institute for County Government, with support from the University of Florida's IFAS. In this podcast, we dive deep into the diverse and dynamic world of Florida's counties with engaging interviews and thought-provoking conversations surrounding the challenges as well as successes of Florida's counties. Each episode brings you firsthand perspectives from county commissioners, government officials, community leaders, and subject matter experts who are shaping the future of our state. We explore a wide range of topics from economic development and public safety to environmental conservation and emerging technologies. Our aim here is to provide a platform for knowledge sharing, collaboration, and inspiration for county officials and residents alike. Whether you're a county commissioner, government professional, or simply interested in understanding the local government landscape, we hope this podcast provides valuable insights and practical takeaways on all things counties.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the County Conversations Podcast. I'm Eric Poole, Director of FACTS Institute for County Government, also known as ICG. We are the training and education arm of the association, offering basic and advanced classes in county government as well as organizational leadership. As a part of our Commissioner Certification Program, we offer electives across several disciplines, including Planning and Growth Management, Emergency Management, Finance, Public Works, among others. Also want to mention that our programs, along with this podcast, are made possible through our long-standing partnership with the University of Florida, IFAS. We want to thank them for their continued support. Now, speaking of partnerships, so much of what we do at FAC from an advocacy standpoint and at ICG from an education perspective would not be possible if we're not for the partnerships we have with other organizations. And over the years, and I've been here for about 20, one of our key partners is and has been with the state's regional planning councils and their umbrella organization, the Florida Regional Councils Association, better known as FRCA. And joining me today to talk about all things RPCs is the current chair of FRCA, Beth Payne. And she is the CEO of the Northeast Florida Regional Planning Council located in Duval County. So Beth, welcome and thank you for traveling to speak with us today.
Thank you, Eric. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. If it's okay, I want to just begin with a little anecdote about my early interaction with RPCs. And really my initial introduction to planning. It was while attending graduate school at the University of West Florida in the late 1980s. I'm probably dating myself. But while I was there, I was a graduate assistant at the Center for State and Local Government. I think it's now called the Whitman Center. We were contracted to do a transportation impact fee study for a small urbanizing county in the Panhandle. Now at age 22, 23, I didn't know anything. I didn't know what an impact fee was. I didn't know anything about transportation. So my directing professor said, reach out to the West Florida Regional Planning Council and learn all you can about transportation. So I got a crash course in transportation and then really got exposed to all of the things that, all the functions and work that the regional planning councils do. And from there, as I moved into the planning profession, I always used them as a resource for different types of issues. And so I'm really happy that we can have this conversation today because I think for a lot of people, unless they've served on an RPC board, they really have no idea what RPCs do. And in fact, I was told once before a legislative committee that RPCs are simply another layer of government. And I think that is a really misplaced description. So I thought what we could do is just begin by talking about the background and history of RPCs, how they're authorized, their primary roles and responsibilities, and the role of county commissioners. So Beth, I'm going to turn it over to you and let's talk about RPCs.
Sure. That's no small list of questions we have that to cover. But agreed. Happy to be here and kind of happy to share, I think, some of the insight and some of the diversity of the work that regional councils do. In fact, I had a board member just recently in my last meeting say, you know, Beth, I think the hardest part of sharing your message is because you all do so many things, it's hard to know what to know you for, you know, and what is that thing that RPCs are known for. So it's difficult even to our board members who serve. So I would say the history is, you know, decades and decades old, authorized in state statute, which is the most important part for us. But I think most regional councils have been around for nearly 50 years. So kind of the depth and breadth of things that regional councils have been involved in across the state is pretty wide. I think what's important about that, not only are we in statute, which makes us a governmental organization that our local governments can work with and contract with really easily, is the fact that we've been able to adapt and change over those 50 years to all sorts of administrations, all sorts of trends across the country and in the state, and then regionally, what's happening in our own region. So regional councils are really good at pivoting. We're really good at being kind of nimble and flexible and meeting the needs of our state partners, our local partners, and certainly our board members who serve.
So can you talk about the composition for those who don't know who serves, how do they get on to an RPC?
Sure. So I'll start. I can give you, it varies a little bit across the state. There are 10 regional planning councils. So it is slightly different. Everyone has a slightly different interlocal agreement with their counties. But that is what's important is while we are designated or authorized in statute, each regional planning council is formed truly by the interlocal agreements that are signed among their counties. So, for instance, in Northeast Florida Regional Council, we have 7 local governments, 7 counties. And then we have an interlocal agreement that really forms what we do in our board composition. So for us, we have essentially 3 seats for each county. That's 2 elected officials and 1 municipal rep. Then we also have 1 per county appointed by the governor. So essentially that's 4 per county. I have 7 counties. I have about 30 board members. So a really large group of people with diverse needs, diverse opinions. In every region, you're going to find rural, suburban, and sometimes urban. So that makes it challenging, but also I think kind of interesting and exciting and lets you kind of get into all sorts of different issues. We do have some ex officio members from our other kind of agencies that we work with, the Department of Economic Opportunity, or whatever its new kind of rendition is, the Water Management District, DEP, and Department of Transportation. So we have a few people who we work with regularly to also kind of provide their input and insight at our board meetings.
So you mentioned you've been, RPCs are nimble and they can adapt and change over time. Can we talk about that a little bit? Because, I mean, RPCs, I want to be careful how I say this, may have had not a perfect reputation with respect to comp plan amendments back in the day when they could provide objections and that sort of stuff. So I know that's changed over time, but Right. Can you talk about that and how that is?
Sure. We've had a very, like I said, we've kind of evolved over these decades that we've been in place. And certainly in the beginning, it was more around and related to growth management. And certainly regional planning councils had authority to kind of review the developments of regional impacts, kind of all sorts of things that used to happen in the growth management world that haven't happened in the state of Florida, I don't know, probably in almost 10 years, I would say. So certainly things were much different back then. I've worked at a regional planning council for 15 years. I kind of came in on the tail end of that. But certainly it was a very different role and function. And I would say that's been our biggest challenge yet success is that we've all kind of reinvigorated and reinvented ourselves and kind of the work that we can do.
So let's just talk about your planning council versus maybe in contrast to some others. What type of planning work do y'all do, planning assistance do y'all do for local governments?
So I would say we still do a lot of comprehensive plan work. But for us, and I think you might find this true for other regional planning councils, we do a lot of work with our small municipalities who have extremely limited resources. Those towns and cities that have, you know, the town clerk, who's also the building official, who's also the planner, who's also the city manager. So we have a lot of small towns that have the same kind of statute requirements of comp plans and updates that really just can't get them done. So we do a lot of work for those folks. I would say we also do economic development, local technical assistance with our counties, some of their comp plan elements, some strategic planning in that regard. And certainly we can get into it more about resiliency and sea level rise and kind of the coastal management element. But I would say the comp plans, some of us are town planners for these small communities. I know Central Florida Regional Planning Council, that's a huge role of theirs, is literally acting as the planner on staff. East Central Florida Regional Planning Council does the same. We do the same up in Northeast. So I think there's a kind of a variety of roles that regional planning councils still play in comprehensive planning.
So in reference to those full-time, it's not a full-time planner, but they're a de facto full-time planner for those small communities?
I mean, for the fact that they don't need a full-time planner because things kind of come in infrequently. It's just an infrequent need for those kind of zoning or special exception applications, the kind of rare land use change that's needed. It just doesn't happen all that frequently. So that's kind of the role we've played. However, I will say in the last several years, with the huge influx of new residents and development in Florida, these small communities and towns now are seeing the development pressure more than ever before and are requiring, I think, additional services. Certainly in my region, and I've heard from other regions who traditionally haven't played a big role, are now being asked to. So I think the change and the growth and development is kind of highlighting the need for planning.
So for some of those communities, are RPCs sort of the first entity that they would turn to for local planning assistance? I'm speaking about small cities, small counties.
Absolutely. So we're a resource to them that is...
But it's not free.
It's not free, but we're approachable and we're willing to kind of work with them where they are. It's kind of different than, I would guess, putting out an RFP and kind of getting back proposals for other firms on what they could do for you. Regional planning councils, I think, really take it a step further and figure out what really needs to be done in the community. And we kind of get to it because we know the community so well. In most instances, we have relationships already established. We're doing work all surrounding, you know, that community already. And we're effective and efficient. We are governmental entities that aren't, you know, out to charge a huge dollar value. We're there to provide the work for our local governments.
So if a small community is not, a small city is not a member of the RPC, can still contract with you to do work? Is that part of the interlocal agreement? Or is that something different?
So that varies across the state. For instance, in Northeast Florida, only counties are members. We don't require cities to be members. If your county is a member, which all of them are, then those municipalities are also members. Yes.
Yeah, I've always seen RPCs as very cost-effective consultants, right? So that's planning. What about transportation? I know, like, for example, the West Florida Regional Planning Council for years, and I'm assuming they still do, provide MPO planning services for the MPOs up in that area.
That's right. So several of our regional councils do host or are the metropolitan planning organizations for their region. So certainly Emerald Coast, I think they're probably the one who has the most. I think they have several between where they kind of confluence at all these other states. So they certainly have a very significant role in transportation in that area. Gainesville and Central Florida also have the rural MPO for that area. I think that's it.
Yeah. So outside of that, I mean, that's a big task, and I think that's an interesting one. But what other, if an RPC is not providing MPO support, what type of transportation assistance planning would an RPC offer?
So several regional planning councils run the Transportation Disadvantage Program. So that's a state program that helps counties to serve those that are having trouble or do not have access to transportation. So regional planning councils often serve as the designated official planning organization. Sorry, I'm trying to remember my acronyms and not use them. We, in fact, in Northeast Florida do that for all seven of our counties. So we're working as the planner to help that, to work with the community transportation coordinator, the County on Aging, for us, JTA in Jacksonville, to kind of help coordinate those services. Likewise, North Central Florida Regional Planning Council does that, as does Central Florida Regional Planning Council and Appalachia Regional Planning Council. So several of us serve in that role, which is one of those state programs that a lot of local governments would maybe struggle to accomplish without some additional resources. So that's something that the Regional Planning Council is really good at, is kind of augmenting staff and augmenting the needs that the county may have to implement programs or projects or tasks. A lot of times when I meet with my board members or my local governments, one of the first things I ask them about is their to-do list, and what is that thing that lingers at the bottom of their to-do list that they can't either find staff to really get accomplished, they can't really figure out how to tackle it, or there's just some impediment to getting it done. Those are a lot of the projects that we tend to work on, or those ones that can just be a little bit more difficult and take some more resources. So we try to help our local governments in that way.
How do y'all coordinate with, again, notwithstanding if you're providing MPO service, but how do you coordinate, or do you coordinate with MPOs and DOT districts in some capacity?
So I think it varies across the state. Some of us who have rural counties that aren't and don't participate or aren't eligible to participate in an MPO, there's a lot of rural transportation planning that goes on across the state. If there's no conduit like an MPO for them to coordinate with DOT, a lot of times it's very onerous or time-consuming for DOT to coordinate with each individual county, rural county on things. So a few of our regional planning councils work on some rural transportation planning to help those rural counties kind of interface and work with DOT to get things done. I know that Appalachia is doing that here. Emerald Coast does it as well. So I think there are some options of how regional planning councils can serve to kind of cut through a few layers of government and cut through a few of the onerous kind of coordination elements that DOT may have with individual counties. They can go to a regional planning council and cover more through one point of contact.
Is that done on a fee basis or just as a member provided service, or how does that?
So that service is more for DOT than it is our local governments, to be honest. DOT is the one who I think has done a few pilot plans with a few of these regions to see how well it works. Certainly it saves them a tremendous amount of time and staff resources to have one point of contact instead of, say, five or six for rural counties. So that's actually a state agency kind of request and help. And that, I think, too, is something that a lot of people maybe don't realize, is the relationship that regional planning councils have with the state agencies. You know, DOT, DEP, particularly Division of Emergency Management. We do a lot of statewide initiatives and a statewide efforts because these state agencies can work with 10 regional planning councils to cover 67 counties. And for them, that's a tremendous kind of time savings and just quality of work. You know, knowing with 10 folks getting it done, the quality control is much easier than 67. So we've done that pretty frequently over the years.
Is that one of the big roles that FRCA plays? I know you have your partnership meetings up here. Is that how you execute some of that?
Yeah, so FRCA is our collection of 10 regional planning councils that come together. The executive directors meet monthly to kind of discuss, you know, all things regional planning council, as you can imagine. And then we also have two larger meetings each year that involve a few of our board members from each of our regional planning councils that kind of come together and talk kind of general policy and different things. But we have partner meetings quarterly, sometimes more often, in which it's a chance for state agencies and other initiatives to kind of just kind of exchange knowledge. We understand and get to learn about all these different things happening in the state. They get a chance to listen to the kind of work that we do. And a lot of times, right, really good partnerships come out of that, projects or tasks come out of that. I'm trying to think lately of one, the Florida Wildlife Corridor Foundation, which has, you know, been such a kind of a pivotal thing in this past session. The Central Florida Regional Planning Council works with them and partners with them frequently to do land use analysis and GIS work for them. And they do it for the whole state. So they do it for the entirety of the corridor, working with one regional planning council to kind of cover, you know, all those counties that the corridor covers. So I don't know if that came about on a partner call, but certainly we kind of engage with not just state agencies, but other kind of statewide initiatives that are going on.
Yeah, we were talking internally about the wildlife corridor. People are really interested in that, right? I mean, it's fascinating.
It is.
How it's, you know, gotten a life of its own. So let's pivot. I hate to use that word pivot, but we've talked about planning. We've talked about transportation. Let's talk about emergency management. A lot of folks don't know, you know, the role that y'all play in that. So can you walk us through a couple of the tasks and assignments?
Absolutely. Regional planning councils have served as the local emergency planning committee, contract holder and organizer for decades. It's got to be 30 years that the Division of Emergency Management has contracted with regional planning councils to do that work. And so that work involves hazardous materials and training of first responders, hazardous materials teams in counties, on the basics, you know, to get up to speed, to be a technician, all the certifications you need. But then it also allows for kind of forward thinking and trends and what's going on. In fact, we had a huge battery fire in Jacksonville recently, and immediately we could turn around to the state and say, you know, our first responders need training on what happens when these, you know, batteries catch on fire and it's not the same, and easily can implement classes like that. That kind of help and stay kind of at the cusp of, you know, when Teslas catch on fire and when these different things happen. So we do a lot of training for first responders and firefighters, and that includes, you know, conferences and planning. It's a lot of technical.
So this is all through the LEPC?
Yes.
And do you do that in coordination with the CFO's office and DEM? How is that?
So it's a contract through DEM, a reoccurring yearly contract every year with DEM. To do that. And that, you know, an LEPC has a board. So they have a set kind of structure that the RPCs manage. They manage the training dollars. They do planning studies every so often on hazardous materials plans and response plans. So it differs, you know, slightly in each region kind of based on what's going on. But it is really a tremendous value to our local governments, and certainly our board members and county commissioners are continually amazed that that is some of the work that we do. It's not well known.
I didn't know that.
We also do, you know, along with hazmat teams, which is a specialty team, there's also urban search and rescue teams. So, you know, I talked about these specialty projects that our state agencies like to use us for. Right now in East Central Florida, they are coordinating training and a full-scale exercise for the USAR, the Urban Search and Rescue Teams, across the state over the last, I think, year and a half. So they were given kind of the charge to make this happen, to provide this training to all of these groups across the state, and then bring them together for a full-scale exercise. So, you know, one of those things that doesn't happen all the time, but when there is that opportunity, oftentimes it's the regional planning councils that these state agencies turn to implement dollars, because it will be timely and it'll be efficient, and it's often a great product at the end.
What else falls under the umbrella of emergency management that RPCs do?
So the regional planning councils when I first began my job as an emergency management planner in Northeast Florida, RPCs manage the statewide regional evacuation study program, right? So that is the data that emergency managers use to draw evacuation zones, and the data that is provided to them about who's going to evacuate and how long it's going to take, and the shelters that are going to be used and those utilization rates. So we're really the conduit between the Division of Emergency Management and the National Hurricane Center to provide that data in a way and in a format to our local elected officials and our local emergency managers to kind of use to best operationalize and protect the citizens in their county. And we've been doing that through multiple iterations. It has to be 15 or 20 years that we've had that partnership. with the division.
Are they updated like every 5 years or something like that?
So it used to be kind of more of a kind of a schedule, but it really depends on the National Hurricane Center, right? When they make evolutions in data and processing and modeling, right? When there's new data to be had is when we kind of get a revamp. Oftentimes it's predicated on population because we want to keep those population numbers up to date because so many people move to Florida. So that plays into it. And then also it's with the Hurricane Center on when things are new and when they've got new data to share.
What about disaster recovery? Do y'all get involved in that very much? I'm thinking of, you know, Hurricane Michael, because you have a lot of smaller communities that didn't have the resources to really.
Right. So disaster recovery is one of those things that kind of spans almost every program we've talked about, right? And I would say a lot of it comes into local government technical assistance. So kind of the depth and the breadth of the needs of recovery. I think a lot of regions and a lot of counties have turned to their regional planning councils to implement some piece part of the recovery process that they have a hard time getting done. Even I think Appalachia with Hurricane Michael is a great example, I think, on just some of the variety of things that, you know, their resource poor counties just didn't have the opportunity to be able to implement. So I think that is certainly something that's done. We also are to dive into economic development, and this is a mouthful of acronyms. Regional planning councils are the designated economic development district for the Economic Development Administration. So that's, you know, a lot of things to say. We get funding from the EDA to provide technical assistance for economic development. That requires a comprehensive kind of economic development strategy plan, which, you know, for the federal government is a worthy exercise, but also a requirement for our local governments to apply for Economic Development Administration grants. So we have to have that process. So we bring together partners, and then we get a chance to help them through these processes. Well, one of the things that has come out in recent years because of the storms that we have faced in Florida is EDA, one of their priorities as of late is economic resilience. So economic resilience is all about, you know, small business preparedness. And at the beginning, it was continuity of operations and can you pay your staff and do you have somewhere else to work from and those kind of things. But now that we've had so many storms, major storms recently, it's kind of changed to that being the basics. But it's also about, you know, how can they stay up and running? How can they mitigate? How can they avoid some of these disruptions for storms? So EDA has funded disaster recovery coordinators for many of our regions to solely focus on the needs of these local governments as they work to recover. So it all began with Hurricane Irma, and they funded several positions across the state of Florida. Certainly Northeast Florida had one because of our impacts. And that person, you know, really focused on the needs of our local governments. How could they help them recover? Or is there grant technical assistance we could write? How do we coordinate meetings? How do we coordinate trainings? What is it that you need? Likewise, it happened after Hurricane Michael. There were these positions funded, and most recently, Hurricanes Ian and Nicole also provided regional planning councils as the economic development districts the opportunity to have a coordinator position to help with that.
So they're funded by EDA, assigned to the RPCs.
Correct.
Never heard of that. It's the first time I heard of that.
So certainly you can imagine we have coordinated an amazing number of meetings among federal agencies and divisions of federal agencies and departments of federal agencies, bringing them together with our local governments who need support and who need funding and who need assistance to triage what the issue is and maybe what federal agency or what federal partner has the opportunity to help with that. But a lot of times, while that's wonderful information for these local governments to receive, they don't have the resources or the staff to act on that. They don't have grant writers. They don't have staff who can run down a lot of this information. So this recovery coordinator position works with local governments, with economic development corporations, with tourism, to work on these projects and things that can help them become more economically resilient. A lot of counties are trying to diversify their tax base, as always, diversify their tourism. We've seen a big push on ecotourism initiatives, and I think it's similar like the Florida Wildlife Corridor, on trails, on these unique assets that we have that aren't the built environment, that aren't going to get wiped away by storms, maybe that aren't beaches and things, but these other assets that they can invest in and that will, you know, pay in dividends moving forward.
Those disaster recovery coordinators, are they, does that get funded as a part of the disaster supplemental that normally comes after? Is that how that's done?
That's part of EDA's disaster supplemental funding. Okay. They choose to fund these positions because they see the value in how we can engage very locally at a very local level. You know, the federal government is, you know, has a hard time kind of getting into the weeds of these communities, and we have these relationships established and can really kind of get involved from day one in helping the community.
So can you go back to what you first were talking about when you're using your acronyms, the EDA and the RPCs are designated what again?
Economic Development Districts.
So but for that designation, are you saying that some local governments couldn't apply or receive EDA funding?
So there has to be a comprehensive economic development strategy plan in place that covers a local government to make them eligible. It just so happens for many years, the way that EDA chooses to work is regionally, and they do this across the country. So this is kind of how it works in most parts of the country, is that these regional organizations perform this role and this function as economic development districts. So yes, they must have this thing in place in order to move forward with EDA grants.
Is that designated also in state statute, or is it
no
code of federal regulations or something? No, okay.
That's just, I suppose, a best practice for EDA and how they choose to use their funding.
What about in the human services world, what about, let's talk about affordable housing, or RPCs involved in affordable housing initiatives?
So, yes, I think it's hard going to, it would be hard for me to say no to probably almost any question that you ask, because the 10 regional planning councils are all so different in the things that they work on. I would say that to me is a little bit of a planning function, right? So some of this local government technical assistance helps some of our local governments with housing initiatives. I know that some regional councils have worked on the SHIP program for their local governments, and then certainly in comprehensive plan language and elements in that regard. And I would say as of late, there's been a big push in this. It's such a big problem. How in the world do we tackle it? You know, what are some options? What are some best practices? And that's a really, I think, comfortable and traditional role for regional planning councils, is to kind of gather and coordinate and collaborate among, whether it's local governments or other regions or other entities across the state, on what's working, what isn't working, maybe what's applicable in some of your rural areas or urban. We actually in Northeast Florida have a committee of our board, an affordable housing committee, in which they kind of dive into issues just like that. You know, dissecting the new legislation and kind of figuring out how it really works on the ground, and kind of sharing those stories and those best practices.
Yeah, I mean, the legislature just appropriated a record amount of funding for affordable housing, and would assume that you would have some smaller local governments turning to RPCs for assistance. Well, let's talk about, if we can, I think, you know, RPCs, I think a lot like us, we kind of track trending issues. And certainly one of those trending issues out there is resiliency. So can you talk about what's resiliency initiatives that the RPCs are starting to get involved in? And I'm sure some have been doing it much longer than others, but
that's exactly right.
It's certainly not a taboo topic anymore, and everybody seems to be embracing it, and there's a lot of money out there. So,
Right, that's it. And I think everyone was lucky to see the tremendous work that occurred in Southeast Florida with the Climate Compact. So while that was not Regional Planning Council led or developed, it showed the value of these communities coming together and working regionally. And that has been established for, I mean, well over a decade before the influx of money, before any of that. But it really shined a light in the state of Florida of the issue. And so I think what you found is several of our regions moved forward with the idea that we all know and love and practice, is that, you know, regionalism on many issues and many fronts is a valued approach and can provide a great resource to our local governments on a problem that is very difficult to tackle, like resiliency. So certainly we've seen some of our regions, Tampa Bay, for instance, they have a tremendous resiliency coalition. They have signed memorandums of agreement with nearly every county, and I would say majority of their municipalities. All these elected officials agreeing that moving forward together and regionally is their strategy. So they have, I will say now, an award-winning resiliency action plan that they've put together over the last several years, covering a wide variety of subjects and metrics and implementable strategies that the region and the local governments can take to improve the resiliency of the Tampa Bay region. They also put on a leadership summit each year, a wildly successful statewide summit. I think there was over 300 people this year, which just speaks to the fact that it's such a growing issue. There is so much money. But it's hard to know how to move forward with that. You know, it's hard to really figure out the needs. It's hard to figure out how to get access to all the money and to really understand your risk. So a lot of regional planning councils are starting with the technical work, so assisting local governments with their vulnerability assessments. So that's required by Florida statute from DEP. You have to have a vulnerability assessment in order to kind of be eligible for this pot of implementation dollars. So like we've talked all along, there are some counties that can easily go out and get that done, but a lot of our other local governments don't have the technical expertise, not enough resources, too many other things to do to tackle some of that. So we've seen a lot of our regional planning councils step into that role to assist our local governments. East Central has a phenomenal collaborative that's ongoing and doing a lot of work in that regard. Northeast, our region, has stepped into that collaborative role and effort, as has Appalachia, has Appalachia Strong, Emerald Coast. I mean, just kind of each region now is understanding, and the communities are kind of asking for that assistance and trying to understand.
I'm wondering if there's too many models, requirements out there, and I'm going to date myself again. Denise, who's sitting back over here, you know, we worked on local mitigation strategy initiatives back in the late 90s at the state, and that required, you know, hazard identification, vulnerability assessments. Now you have DEP requiring a vulnerability assessment. There's all these like different, and there's all these different risk models out there. I'm wondering if there's, you know, if there's a little bit of confusion for technicians at the local level that are trying to like put all this stuff together, and you got different pots of money. You got state money, you got FEMA money, you got, I mean, almost every federal agency now has some sort of resiliency pot that you can access. So I don't know if you agree with that that view, or are you running into that, but it just seems like there's just a lot of overlap.
And right.
So an NPO might be doing something on resiliency and vulnerability assessment, and another
right.
entity is doing the same thing, and are they really talking?
It's a huge challenge, and I think that's why we found the regional model so successful, is that we can bring a lot of those people to the table to discuss all of those things. So whether it's a discussion or a working group on methodology, on understanding, is every county using the same model? Are they using the same data? Are they using the
right.
same methodology to
right.
measure, you know, compare apples to apples? That's a huge challenge, and certainly is not one to be solved, I think, quickly. But funding opportunities is another huge one. And I think what we've also seen, I think, from regional planning councils work with our federal partners is that these federal agencies want a big return on investment. They want big projects. They want regional projects. They want to see projects that cross congressional districts, right? And much less county boundaries. I mean, they want to see kind of a big return. So that, I think, speaks even more to the importance of gathering our local governments together to understand, you know, what can they get for themselves in their local government? You know, what kind of best suits them? But then it is time, I think, to be creative and to be able to think outside of the box on how we can work together to potentially pull down some of this, you know, amazing amounts of federal dollars that are out there. And is that coordinating with MPOs for federal PROTECT dollars? It is. It's trying to figure out all the partnerships that you can bring to the table to kind of make all this work for our local governments who are just... oftentimes, money is not always the answer to everything if you can't implement it, if you can't get access to it. So I think the regional collaboratives are a great approach to starting to kind of tread lightly into that. You know, a good example is a lot of our regional planning councils have received grant funding from the Department of Defense to do resiliency work around our military installations in Florida. And so that began in Tampa, and the planning process itself is called a Military Installation Resilience Review. And so that is taking a look at resilience efforts and initiatives outside of the fence line of military installations to ensure that they can continue on with their mission, right? Certainly it's about federal investment into the state of Florida and how we can protect that federal investment and our military's readiness. Began in Tampa, and South Florida is also undertaking a military installation resilience review. Emerald Coast just signed their contract to also perform that function. East Central Florida is in the process of working through that. Northeast Florida is in the process of working through that. So that's even another federal agency that recognizes the value of working regionally on a project like that for the benefit of the state. So it's been a priority of both the governor and the chief resilience officer in the state. So we've been working closely with him to make sure that these projects get funded and get completed.
Do you have an example of that? Because you said outside the fence line. I've heard about this before, but I don't know of any examples that I can point to.
So I would say, you know, a really good one in East Central is the bridge to Cape Canaveral. I think they've done a ton of work on transportation related on what would happen to that bridge or those roadways that get you out to Cape Canaveral, what that looks like in the future years with sea level rise and storm surge and kind of those kinds of things. For us in Northeast Florida, we have Naval Station Mayport that's extremely vulnerable to sea level rise. And again, transportation is an issue. They get all of a lot of their water and sewer from outside the fence line coming from local governments that if something happens to that, that would severely impact their mission. Certainly in the panhandle with Emerald Coast, I do think it's a lot of storms and what hurricane damage does. But everyone is different, and I think that's the beauty of working with the Regional Planning Council is that they have so many of those relationships and connections and history of working, you know, in the area that they really can kind of, you know, dive deep on what those connections are that maybe you don't think of, right? That maybe don't come to mind. But it's really gathering those players and having those conversations in any way that we can help and identify the problem so we can identify the solution and the funding to implement it.
It's awesome. Another trending issue, and we had talked about this before we started the podcast, but it's just on broadband and probably some of the more urbanized RPCs may not be involved in it, but I think it's an important issue for counties and small cities that are up here in the panhandle that don't have ready access to broadband services, but there's a ton of money out there. I mean, a ton of money at both the state level and the federal level. I don't know if you can speak to that, Beth, on...
I mean, I do think that I think you're kind of spot on in that some of the more urban regional planning councils don't get involved. My region, being Jacksonville and surrounds, don't haven't gotten involved. But I know the Panhandle, I know the Appalachia region is assisting, right, their rural communities in broadband plans, maybe in some feasibility work. And again, a lot of it, in my opinion, is kind of deciphering the offerings. You know, what is the grant offering? How do we apply for the grant? Can we get technical assistance, you know, to write the grant? And then, again, sometimes getting the money is not always the answer. You have to have someone to administer it. You have to have someone to do the reporting requirements. So I would say in a rural community that's less resources, regional planning councils kind of serve all of those functions from the beginning to the end, and also help with the local technology committees that were formed, you know, standing those up and kind of helping our local governments just kind of implement some of the best practices that have been shared to kind of have a chance to even grab a share of that money.
Well, we've covered a lot of topics,
right.
But you're right. I can mention anything. I could talk about, if I mention CDBG, you could probably talk about CDBG and your role there. But why don't we kind of round things off with just talking about FRCA, the Florida Regional Councils Association, and how you're formed and how you're structured and what y'all do.
Right. And before I do that, I had a good reminder of another program that I just do want to share because it is such a unique program in the state. It began, there are several of us who work on the Healthcare Coalition program. So that's a program funded through ASPR, which is a federal agency, I think now under CDC, that comes through the Florida Department of Health. But this is about disaster preparedness for the healthcare sector. So the healthcare sector is the whole community of the healthcare sector. So that's everyone from hospitals to assisted livings and nursing homes to dialysis centers to pharmacists to emergency management and paramedics and fire and EMS. So we're kind of covering the whole gamut of the spectrum to make sure that our healthcare community can function after a disaster, during and after a disaster. So Northeast Florida does it. We have a healthcare coalition program for 18 counties across North Florida. And Appalachia also does it, kind of for the Big Bend and for their area. And this is about... It ties right into emergency management. This is about training. This is about exercises. This is about creating plans that are needed from the federal level to the state level. This is about providing facilities with dollars in projects to help them facilitate providing medical care during a disaster. So it's really an interesting program. It's not something you would ever associate with a regional planning council. They exist across the state of Florida, but regional planning councils are a really good fit for some of these because of our relationships, because of our work in emergency management. So this has been, I guess, going on, I don't know, maybe 10 years in Northeast. We kind of began in the beginning when this program started. But it's really been a huge value to our community. It means a lot to our elected officials, know that we are serving their community facilities and, in essence, their citizens, you know, during a disaster and after. So keep your ears out for that.
Yeah, I never. So RPCs are members of the coalition, or
they run the coalition.
You run the coalition.
We staff the coalition. So in Northeast Florida, we have 500 members. In our coalition, and I mean hundreds of facilities, every major hospital system is involved in the coalition and participates. Again, a lot of sharing of best practices, a lot of training opportunities, a lot of the things that large hospitals may be able to easily do, but some of our smaller communities often don't have the staff and the resources to do some of these things. A big role in information sharing during events, during COVID, played a big role with DOH and sharing information. Similarly, during a disaster, assisting information sharing for hospital evacuations. and patient placement. So a really interesting role that some of us have taken on.
But not all RPCs?
No.
Yeah, just, okay.
But I can't kind of get away. I should have. That was a good
that's good.
A good mention. And that's a program that we began with in Northeast Florida a long time ago. So all back right. to Fricka.
Back to Fricka. I know we talked a little bit about, you know, partnership meetings up here, but I want you to have an opportunity to talk about that organization.
Right. So Fricka, the Florida Regional Councils Association, again, is a great way for the regional planning councils to come together, to be able to share our message, and to be able to share the services and the work that we provide across the state. And so kind of as we've talked over this last, you know, 30 minutes, it's a diverse set of offerings that each regional planning council has. And so a lot of times, a lot of the work we do can get kind of lost in the minutiae of all the many programs and projects that we all have going on. So Fricka is a great conduit to our partners to have the ability to share collectively about, you know, the impact we're having on our local governments, to our county commissioners, and to our state agencies. So we're lucky that Fricka is kind of based here in Tallahassee. So get to have lots of opportunity for those of us who aren't here to come and meet and be a part of all that's happening in Tallahassee. But then having our coordinator here is a huge help. 365 days a year to make sure that our message is being shared with everyone. And it also gives a chance for our board members. We have a policy board that comes together. As I mentioned earlier, it's a few members from each regional planning council board, and they get a chance to come together and discuss, you know, big issues in policy. And certainly as, you know, the Florida Association of County, you know, you recognize the value in that, that kind of
Absolutely.
Peer exchange, that best practice sharing exchange. I like to tell people that, you know, a lot of times, you know, the answer really is sitting around a table and sharing and talking through some of these issues. And our elected officials are oftentimes pulled in so many directions that they just don't have that opportunity. They can't make time for it, or it just becomes difficult. And I feel like regional planning councils serve that function. People like, you know, FLC and FAC serve that function. And that's kind of also a function of Fricka, is to have a chance to bring these people together and talk through these issues and help regional planning councils kind of pivot in the world of that we live in the state we live in, and in our region.
Awesome. And a lot of information. Beth, again, I want to thank you for joining us today.